Welcome, SMQB listeners, to episode 189, brought to you by, hit it, Pope.
Assembly Software, the leading software case management software for trial lawyers around the country. I use it. Bison uses it. I think we have maybe a couple others.
I use it. Yeah, I use it too.
It's yes. The best. It's and now try out their AI product.
Ooh.
Yeah, very sharp. Good stuff. Thanks.
As long as it doesn't become self-aware, I'm happy with it.
House and Milk, how you doing? Good to see you.
Yeah, good.
I'm doing good.
It's good to have most of the team back. We're still missing Bison, who's ostensibly traveling back.
Is he in Portugal?
We're not really sure. He says he's on a plane. I'll believe it when I see it.
Rumor has it he's back in the country. Just don't know where.
He's in hiding after that game yesterday.
I know it. Ooh. I know it.
Russell, he likes some moral victories. He feels good about that outcome.
He does.
He's down with Mike Williams now. That's for sure.
Steelers one game away from a winning season. Shocking.
Yep.
Crazy.
Milk, who are you taking to the bar this week?
Well, I'm going to take this lovely gentleman behind me. Not Napier. I'm going to take our University of Florida Athletic Director, Scott Strickland, and I'm going to take him to a bar to throw a drink in his face, not to have a drink with him, because you may have seen this week, he sent out a letter, a vote of confidence. This was before the Texas game, saying he was going to keep Billy Napier, wasn't going to make a change. This is the direction we're headed in. And you know what he got in return? Well, it was 49-0 at one point in Austin, Texas. This is unbelievable. I want both of them going behind me, Napier and Strickland. Bye-bye. Fired. Get rid of them. Throw a drink in their face. I hate them both, and I'm done.
Okay.
Wow.
Feel better now?
Bars.
Yeah. I can't stand these guys. I hate Napier more than life. Someone else go.
Kinky, who are you taking? House.
Howdy, gents. There's going to be a theme for this all week's podcast.
Oh, my God. Are you
here we serious? Go. Oh, we are damn serious. How about them, Cowboys? So I can't decide whether I'm going to bring Jerry Jones or Dak Prescott's removed hamstring or wherever the F is missing from them. Or I think I'm going to need a big bar because I'm going to bring the whole goddamn red zone to the bar and introduce the Cowboys to it because they hadn't seen it in a bunch of weeks. So that's who I'm bringing to the bar. How about that, Cowboys?
Yeehaw!
What? Are you like some dude ranch Stephen A combo thing? What's going on there, House?
I'm coming as close as I can to him today. Here we go.
Wow. Where's the cigar?
It's a big win yesterday. It's a big win.
But please don't bring Jerry to the bar again. Who are you bringing?
I'm going to bring Steven.
Oh.
Jerry's fucking son. See, what the hell does he have in mind for the future of the franchise? Because it is a dire, dire outlook. We're being held hostage by a guy who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And we'll talk about it later because I'm going to throw some punches as well. But yeah, Stephen Jones, I want to see if I believe there's a future for somebody who's more sane, and I'm not positive yet.
Well, I'm going to switch gears, get away from these grievances, and the big fight coming up Friday, Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul.
Oh, and guess where it is?
Where at the
it's a jury
Jerry's world.
Oh my
Jerry's gonna
God.
Line his pockets God. With millions and millions of dollars.
That's a shame. Well, I personally think Jake Paul represents much that is wrong with people, the country, the world, you name it. It's kind of, I think he's an asshole. Anyway, I want to take Mike Tyson to the bar and just say, champ, you know, at your age, are you ready for this? Should you be doing this? And if you're going to do it, would you please come out and tear this guy's head off? That's who I'm taking to the bar. I have a feeling that Iron Mike is going to give us one last big performance.
I think he might get killed.
I know you said that.
I'm kind of worried about him.
It's all whether he can land punches. If he can land punches, he still has the strongest punch known to man. I think he's too slow.
Good? Yeah, he's good. He's actually a legitimate fighter, and he's gotten big and strong.
Yeah, I think Tyson's too slow.
Tyson's like 50, something years old.
He's way older than 50.
He's like in his late 50s.
He's my age. He's 58.
Wow. I'd take Pope in that fight too. So I think Tyson's
if any one of us in that fight with Mike Tyson, even if he was 75 and we remained our current age, I'd spend that whole fight running away from him. He can hit. All right, let's talk about NFL Week 10. We have this one topic we wanted to cover about the bad teams, but anyone have some highlights they want to cover?
I just want to say that I know that Milk, and he's got a legit grievance, but he hates the Thursday night game, okay? But for the last 3 weeks, Thursday night has brought us some of the best we've had in the NFL. The Rams upset the Vikings a couple weeks ago. The Jets upset the Texans the following week. And then this past week, we had what may be the game of the year in the Ravens-Bengals. We had two-point conversion part deux come up, and this time the Bengals fell short. But I still believe in the Bengals. I still say don't count them out. I still believe that Burrow can throw the ball. I don't know. I haven't looked ahead at their schedule. But the Ravens, man, they give up too many points. Like, I just don't know that you can say the Ravens are automatic opponent in the AFC Championship versus the Chiefs. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see any of that game, but I'm curious what this group's latest thoughts are on both the Ravens and the Bengals.
Don't count out the Bills.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the Bills. I'm just talking about that game and the contestants in that game.
I love the Bengals, but are they running out of time here? I mean, what are they now? Four and six?
Not at all. I was going to go over.
How many more can they lose?
Well, I was going to go over it later. I mean, you guys know who has the last wild card right now as we sit here?
Who?
In the AFC?
Who?
Oh, that'd be the Denver Broncos at 5-5, right? And then and then you got 8-9 is the Colts and Bengals both at 4-6. Bengals are still in this, baby. No problem.
I like them. I like them.
No, they're a good team. They're definitely a good team. They can get their running game going and get their offensive line cohesive. I think they're a real good team, and they've
just
backbreaking losses. They have tough losses.
Yeah, I love their coach had the balls to go for two.
Yep.
At the end of the game. That's what I liked. So even though he didn't get
the Ravens, on the other hand, look like they're unstoppable 1 week and then they're a different team the next. So I can't say what I think of the Ravens. They're just never consistent.
This is why I love everyone loves the NFL year after year after year. You can forget about prohibitive favorites. I mean, Chiefs are prohibitive favorite. You need to block a field goal against the Bengals to win a game at home. The 49ers are prohibitive favorite. They're playing the Buccaneers JV team and win by a field goal. The Vikings are prohibitive favorite. The Jaguars are worst of the worst, and they win 12-7. So, I mean, I think, and the Saints. The Lions are prohibitive favorite. I mean, they really, really had to struggle through lots of interceptions from Jared Goff to come back and beat the Texans. So,
but that, I think, was a signature win. That was the kind of win that takes a team that and turns them into a team like the Chiefs, who just like win. A win is a win. If you can figure out a way to get out the win, then you're well on your way. And to me, the Lions have taken a step forward from that game.
Yeah,
go back to the Ravens real quick. I mean, we're going to find out in the next three games. They play at Pittsburgh. They play, a surprisingly good Chargers team. And then the Eagles come to town. Those are, we'll know a lot more about the Ravens in three games.
The team, I think.
So, I think I don't think the Colts are a measuring stick, but I think Pope is right that the Bills, they give up some points, but if Josh Allen's not turning over the football, I think they're really going to push
the Chiefs a lot over there. But there's just no runaway, and you can't say there's any runaway in the NFC either. I think the Lions are very, very impressive, but they've got their gaps too. And I'm not going to say anything about the Eagles. We can talk about that game, but I just, what Nate says all the time, it's like this is a legend in someone's mind that the Cowboys, we keep talking about them, Jerry Jones and America's team, but it's not a measuring stick for anybody. It's not, you can't say that all of a sudden the Eagles are world beaters because they beat the living crap out of Dallas in Dallas. So
we'll find out this week.
Yeah, we'll find
out. Dallas is bad in so many ways right now. They're right there with the Giants.
Brutal. They are. They really are.
In some ways, they might be in worse shape because of the immature behavior in the face of losses from some of their players.
A lot of finger pointing going on. I mean, the locker room is, we got all kinds of issues, and it starts with the top.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard a commentator on sports radio this morning coming in say, Dallas is a dumb team, dumb stadium, dumb owner, dumb GM. Yeah.
What you need?
One in the same, owner and GM.
But who said that?
I mean, I've got, as my background, I've got the sun coming in, blinding everybody, as anybody who's watched a game at Jerry World lately can attest to. And it's just a sign of the franchise in moral crumble right now. Our owner is like, well, what are you gonna, we'll build another damn stadium? I mean, what am I supposed to do about it? Well, put some fucking curtains up like you do at concerts to close out the sun. It's just his pigheadedness and his inability to ever admit that he's wrong has put this franchise in the ditch, and there's no hope. I mean, this week our $60 million quarterback is out for the year because, no fault of his own, but he tore his hamstring off his bone. And name me another quarterback that's had surgery where they repaired a hamstring and put it back on the bone. I don't know of any. I mean, is it going to impact his career? He's an older quarterback anyway, probably.
He doesn't run anymore.
Right? So, yeah, but I mean, his mobility, that's one of his problems now he's not a threat to run. So we've got, him tied to another four-year contract or whatever, and CeeDee Lamb, without a good quarterback, he's not going to be able to be productive. And then, of course, give the ball to Zeke. And by the way, Toby, we know where the red zone is. We just don't know how to fucking convert in the red zone. Give the ball to Zeke and watch him fumble on the 2-yard line as he rushes for 2 yards into the end zone. I mean, not that the game was competitive, but at that point, late in the second quarter, the game was competitive. You can't give up. They had 5 turnovers yesterday. That's 2 back-to-back
games. So the Cowboys portion of the show is about that.
No, why are we cutting them off? This is joyous. Please, go on. This is like
keep going.
We're supposed to be talking about highlights at this point.
Oh, well, look, I think it's a good segue to what was kind of our topic for this week, which is the haves and the have-nots in the NFL right now. Start with owner, GM, coach.
Right.
And Rooster, I don't know if maybe you want to kick it off if you had some teams in mind, but I looked into that. Yeah.
Before we get to them, though, I wanted to point out an example of how a change in leadership can produce some immediate positive results. And that is the Los Angeles Chargers with Jim Harbaugh. They're 6-3 and they're getting better every week. They have a strong defense. They've decided they're going to build up their offensive line and run the ball, which frees up Herbert to just be the stud that he is. That team is what they should have been 2 years ago now because they finally have a head coach. Let me tell you what made me think of this. There are, after 9 weeks or 10, was it 10 weeks?
10 weeks. Some have played 10, some played 9.
10 weeks. There are 6 teams that have only won 3, 5, 6, only won 2 games. They are the Dolphins, and I think the Dolphins are in a different category than the other 4. The Dolphins don't have horrible ownership, horrible GM, horrible coach. They've just had bad injury luck. But you have the Dolphins, Cleveland, Tennessee, Jacksonville is 2-8. Las Vegas, perpetually bad, and the Giants, all 2-win teams. Then you have 5 3-win teams, the Saints, the Panthers, the Cowboys, the Jets, the Patriots. And it looks like the Bears at 4-5 are starting to head south too.
Yep.
So, you know, the question is what some of these teams have been relatively recently in the Super Bowl. Giants won 2 in our lifetime. Panthers were there once recently. And then things changed with ownership, with coaches, with their drafts, their scouting. Let's take this a couple of these teams. Cleveland. Can you not just trace it to one really stupid, short-sighted decision?
Sure. Deshaun.
You know, Deshaun Watson throws you the whole farm away for a guy who already knew had nothing but red flags up around him. And they took that risk, and, you know, it just shows you what short-term goals like that can do to you, you know, if you're not smart. Tennessee got rid of Mike Vrabel, an excellent coach. For what reason, I don't understand. Gave away the farm. They gave away A.J. Brown. They gave away Derrick Henry and others. What do they have to show for that? What was the goal? What was the plan? Was there a strategy there that anyone understands? I don't. Let me ask you, House, about Jacksonville at 2-8. Jacksonville was supposed to be on the rise, and they hired Doug Peterson to be their coach, and it's gone completely south with him at the helm. Why is that?
Well, the other choice they made, and look, I think this subject is so good because you called it taking the risk. I call it desperation moves.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, teams, bad choice of words.
Good choice. I'm just saying teams feel in the NFL, GMs feel desperate and they make these moves out of desperation. And I get it. I get that what takes you to a Super Bowl is a quarterback, but this decision to choose Trevor Lawrence was a 10-year decision for the Jaguars. And you can go on and on and on, including Daniel Jones. And then what happens is the desperation gets compounded when you get right to that edge where you decide to go for a second contract or not. And it's like, have we seen enough? And what do the Jaguars do? Desperate. I don't know. We're not positioned well enough in the draft to get a top one. So let's double down on Trevor Lawrence. Let's double downs on Daniel Jones. Let's double down on Dak Prescott. I think these are desperate moves. And I think the teams that I you were probably getting to that are on the flip side, from the Chiefs to the Niners to the Eagles to the Ravens to the Bills, you know, those teams make moves of stability. They make moves and they pick little pieces here and there. The Eagles are thriving right now with Vic Fangio at defensive coordinator. That was a really big move that they made. And they got a guy for like $1.1 million in Zach Bond, who no one's ever heard of playing middle linebacker. And he's far and away the highest graded linebacker for the last several weeks in the NFL. And someone asked Vic Fangio if they were going to make a move at the deadline, or if he had looked, what about the conventional wisdom that other people are saying about certain players? He's like, I don't need conventional wisdom. I trust my own eyes. I don't listen to what the pundits are saying. I watch film. I trust my own eyes. I thought Zach Bond was a guy that made plays all over the field. They could fit in the right system. It's decisions like that that teams make at the general manager level, at the coach level, at the assistant coach level. Look, I think the Bucs, they've hit injury. If they did not lose Evans and Godwin, what's the guy's name? Licht or whatever his name is.
Jason Light is a great GM, but like, we can talk about Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, but Milk.
You have a stable organization.
You can criticize Bowles, but there wasn't a lot of criticism when you were well. When you guys were well, Bowles wasn't that bad. You know, like, you guys have a very stable organization, and when you're healthy again, Light and that team are going to bring you guys to success. You know, Pope was talking about before, that team, the Cowboys, will remain bad as long as their owner and GM are the same. And we saw what a change in leadership happens in Washington. Yeah, they had a tough loss yesterday, but oh my God, Look at the weight that's off their shoulders and how they've changed by becoming a serious franchise in 1 year.
Yeah. Let me just juxtapose the Giants with some of what you've said. Joe Shane was brought in as GM with no GM experience. He was like the assistant to the GM at Buffalo to clean up the mess that Dave Gettleman created in New York. Gettleman had three kind of star draft picks in the few years before that. Saquon Barkley, Danny Dimes, and Xavier McDaniel. Two of those guys are pro bowlers, and Saquon Barkley may be the best running back in all of football. So what does Sean do? Just what you said. Danny Dimes' contract is coming up, and the question is, do we renew him or not? And he freaking panics and pays this guy, I think, three times more than he was worth. He hadn't done a damn thing to deserve the contract extension. He won one playoff game against the Vikings in Europe. That was exciting in Daboll's first year as coach. But Danny Dimes hasn't done a damn thing, and he's never really shown that he deserves to be even in the top half of quarterbacks in the NFL. And we pay him $40 million a year. And as a result, we had to get rid of Saquon Barkley, who is now running the Eagles potentially to the Super Bowl, and Xavier McDaniel, who's going to be in the Pro Bowl as a safety for the Packers. Now, I don't blame Shane for some of his draft picks, because unless there was poor scouting, I don't think Evan Neal was at the time considered to be a bad pick. He just didn't work out at offensive right tackle. But I mean, he was the starting tackle at Alabama, and everyone thought he was the real deal. How that went wrong, I don't know. But you contrast where the Giants have been. I bet you I can't even name all of the coaches they've had since Tom Coughlin. With the Steelers. The Steelers have had three head coaches in my lifetime.
In the history of their franchise.
Yeah. I'm 62 years old. They've had three head coaches. And what did the Steelers do when Roethlisberger retired? You know, they tried they didn't panic. They drafted a couple of guys who didn't work out. And then they picked up off the scrap heap Russell Wilson for like $1 million a year, Russell Wilson. And Jason Fields. Giants could have had either or both of those guys, but they weren't willing to say to Russell Wilson, you can compete for the starting job against Daniel Jones. I mean, come on. They're protecting Daniel Jones. We could have had Russell Wilson, who's looking like he's going to be a very serviceable winning quarterback for the Steelers this year. Didn't do it because we have guys who don't know what they're doing. That's the answer.
Well, I mean, that's the problem in Dallas. We have just committed $100 million a year to a quarterback and a receiver. That's just asinine. There's no quarterback that's worth $60 million, and it damn sure isn't Dak Prescott, who hadn't even led his team to an NFC championship game, let alone a Super Bowl. So why would you pay him a record contract? This was his contract year. This is the year he should have made him earn his contract. Now, obviously, he's not able to play the rest of the year. That, you know, whether he was signed or not, that probably was going to happen to him. But, you know, that's how football goes. I mean, you know, it's a brutal business, but it is a business. And you have no right to mortgage the future of your franchise by soaking your players with $100 million, two players, to the detriment of your offensive line, your defensive line, your secondary, and your fucking running backs who suck.
Well, you guys are just like Las Vegas. You know, the Davis family runs that team, and the Jones family runs
that team. Tom Brady.
And you're never there. Neither one of them is going to change anytime soon. And
no.
The Raiders, since the late 60s, if they had no quarterback, no offensive line, and some guy proved to be the fastest wide receiver coming out of college, even if he had stone hands, the Raiders would draft that guy with their number one pick. That's just the way they are. They're just terrible.
But the other thing about being a GM is not just about the signings, re-signings on contracts, but it's whether you're a fantasy football manager, whether you're a Monopoly player, whatever you are, you work the best trades, you work the best value you can possibly work. No one has mastered that the way Howie Roseman has mastered that. He friggin' thieved the Titans out of AJ Brown. Yeah. He stole the pick that got Devontae Smith. He grabbed Jalen Hurts in the second round when they already had Carson Wentz. He got Jalen Carter because of a really bad road incident that, you know, people were worried about his character, and Jalen Carter drops to number 10. He drafts Quinyon Mitchell late in the draft because he's from Toledo, and Cooper DeJean because he's a white cornerback from Iowa, and who's going to take a white cornerback from Iowa? And both those guys could, if we still had like legit Pro Bowls, could be Pro Bowl secondary players, first team or second team. Like, you have to find value where you can get it. The Ravens are another team that keep finding value when you can get it at the defensive position, at the, you know, I think the Chiefs are another team, you know, grabbing these players when you can grab them and working them into the system. That's why those teams are perennial winners. There was one team that you had, and then I'll stop. There's one team that you had that's at the bottom that I don't think going to be in the bottom very long, and that's the Patriots. I think the Patriots are going to turn it around quick. Some of it depends on Drake May, but they know how to do this. And I think out of all those teams, they're going to rebuild quickly. They're focusing on defense. They've got a good coach, and I think they're going to build it back quickly. You got to find value, and you got to work within a system.
You mentioned the Ravens. The Ravens had Ozzie Newsome as their GM for many years, and he was fantastic. When he retired, they didn't miss a beat. They must have, you know, had somebody under him that came up as GM.
It was Eric DaCosta.
And you notice their owner never gets involved in any of this. Stays out of the way. The GM runs the show, and they have a stable, long-term head coach. That's why it's a solid organization.
Let me talk about the Chiefs real quick, because I have a personal story. Because I went to an award ceremony recently where Clark Hunt got an award from the Dallas Business World Council for his contributions, you know, to business society. And he came, and it was ultimately awesome because he trolled Jerry Jones. He brought his three Lombardis and he put them up there on the dais in front of everyone who's in the room, you know, mostly Cowboy fans. But Clark said something that really stuck with me. He said, you know, with our team, culture is the most important thing. We provide a culture that players feel comfortable talking with coaches, with expressing their frustration, with, however they're looking at management. You know, we want to try to provide open lines of communication. The culture of the players is more important than the glory of the individual. And the whole room kind of chuckled because they knew exactly who he was referring to. Can you guys name me the GM for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yes.
That's close.
Without looking.
No, I think it's Brett Veach, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. And that's the thing. The GM for the Kansas City Chiefs isn't out there seeking credit for what he's doing. You know, Andy Reid kind of runs the show, obviously. But
that's true.
But Clark, as the owner, as opposed to like a Jerry Jones or a Davis family member, he allows, you know, the culture of the team to develop and doesn't assert himself, you know, like a narcissist that those guys are. And I think that's a huge difference between a team like Kansas City and a team like Dallas. And you can probably look at the difference between the teams or the haves and the have-nots. You can find similar things rating throughout the NFL.
Listen, when I went to the Combine last year, I sent you guys a picture of the guy sitting next to me on the plane. It was Dan Rooney. He's there scouting for the Steelers. I mean, the man's family owns the team, and he's working in the trenches as a scout on that team. I mean, you know.
But is he holding press conferences talking about how?
No, he doesn't do anything to draw any attention to himself. He doesn't care who knows who he is. It's just a different culture, like you say, which is why they're never bad. They're sometimes mediocre, but they're never bad.
Yeah, but you know what, though? All of these things, it gets back to, and I'm not to take away anything from a good GM. All of these teams that we're mentioning have really good quarterbacks.
Yep.
Pretty easy when you have Patrick, not easy, but you have Patrick Mahomes. Okay. Like, maybe greatest quarterback of all time. If Jaden Daniels is wearing a Giants uniform today, how are the Giants?
Better.
Better.
I bet it's a different team.
Okay, but then maybe fine. Not. Milk, but again, how do you explain the Bucks? You're not saying Baker's a great quarterback.
Baker's playing unbelievable.
But listen,
I don't know what's happened.
No.
I don't know what's happened, but
you know, he's Giants, a good team.
You know, Baker is not a bad quarterback.
You know who the Giants GM at the time passed up to draft Daniel Jones?
Who?
The quarterback of the Bills.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. Yeah.
Oops.
I mean, just the scouting's not good. The decision making's not good.
Correct. You're right. That's what happens is these horror. And come on, you've traded Saquon in division. What the fuck? Who does that? That is the worst decision I've ever.
We let him walk. So that Joe Shane could look like he was magnanimous on that stupid HBO show.
Fine.
It was dumb all the way around.
Letting him walk is stupid. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Hey, by the way, fellas, it's week 10 and the Arizona Cardinals are actually getting better. What's going on? The world's upside down.
It's crazy.
I think, you know, I first, when he left, I thought Jonathan Gannon was like, who cares? It turns out that Jonathan Gannon's a pretty good coach. And it's interesting, right? Because Kingsbury couldn't get that team to play this way, but yet Kingsbury's a very good, very, very good coordinator. But this team, first of all, I think they were helped out a lot with the addition of Marvin Harrison, like a lot. I think he's really changed that offense quite a bit. Their defense has improved, but I think Gannon can coach. And, you know, the division's been down a little bit. The Seahawks are underperforming. The Niners are beat up. The Rams, So I think they're benefiting from that too. But yeah, I mean, the Cardinals are a nice surprise so far. They're one of the nice surprises.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything else? I know it's fashionable to say how Kansas City at 9-0 doesn't seem like a 9-0 team, but they just win.
Their time is running out. Their time is running out.
Oh, they're going to lose a game for sure, and that might be the best thing that happens to them.
Yeah,
they've won four games like in the last
either
last play or last couple seconds or minutes.
Yesterday's game was lost.
Yeah,
that game was lost. It's just
block field goal
pulled it out in the end.
So, you know, House, you guys did the same thing last year. Y'all were winning games, in the last minutes, winning games you probably shouldn't have, and we're on an amazing roll. But we kept saying you can only keep doing that for so long. And boy, did you guys, when you lost a game, it spun out of control. Now, I don't see that happening with Kansas City, but I do see Kansas City coming back to earth before the end of the year.
Well, one last thing on a bad team, Milk. The Saints have a new coach, and they won against a good Falcons team yesterday. Are they going to be more like they were the first two games of the year, or they just stink?
I'm not buying into the Saints at all. Look, it's a division game that those teams always play each other tough. The Falcons they're like that. You know, they don't have a really good defense. I don't think, at least. And that showed yesterday.
Did Drake London play in that game?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah,
he's a little banged up, but he ultimately played. But I mean, they've had a couple losses like that this year, the Falcons. I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to win the NFC South still, but I just don't have them going very far. But no, I think the Saints will come back to her next week.
Go ahead, House.
Yeah. So, couple things. I think Pope And you guys were right that last year, the Eagles 10-1 record was mostly smoke and mirrors. And then it was covering up a lot of stuff underneath. I do also agree that the Chiefs won't fall down that hard, but there's a lot of smoke and mirrors for like 3-4 weeks in a row. The Chiefs are there for the taking. And the question is whether they get it right in time for the playoffs, or do they smoke and mirror it all the way to the playoffs and then have a massive crumble beat down from somebody like the Ravens or the Bills. I just, you know, look, they're the champions until they get knocked off, and Mahomes is Mahomes, but I think there's lots of cracks in that foundation. Well, but
yeah, I mean, the game of the year next for the AFC right now to date is next week with the Chiefs going to Buffalo. I mean, let's see if they're able to get out of Buffalo with an undefeated record, then, you know, maybe we're talking different next Monday.
They're always tough against Buffalo. Let's move on to our Plaxico locks. Where, really? how do we stand, Ass?
Okay, so listen, I know we were telling everybody to take us to the betting window. We've had a couple of rough weeks, not gonna lie. Only pulled down maybe 2 wins out of the 5 of us for each of the last few weeks. In this past week, we only had 1 winner, that being Rooster with the Cardinals -1 versus the, or whatever it was, -1 versus the Jets. I don't know how it ever got to be that way. And, you know, Milk had a kissing sister situation with Lions and the Texans and the push, but everybody else lost. Commanders, I don't know why I ever bet on them. They suck. -2.5 versus the Steelers.
You bet on them like 3 weeks in a row.
Bison took the Falcons, which was a surprising loss. And Pope had every reason to take the Bears -6.5 versus the Patriots, but those two teams are going in exact opposite directions, which brings us to records of Roosters now made it to the tie for the top of the perch. Roosters at 7-3. I am also at 7-3. Milk is now 5-4-1. Pope is 5-5, and Bison is 4-6. We still overall have a winning record as a crew. Let's get back on it this week.
Let's do it.
I do have Bison's pick, and just because I feel bad for the guy because he lost so badly yesterday to the Steelers, I'm going to allow him to get that first pick. And it is, he's got, hopefully this doesn't steal it from anybody, but he's got the Bengals getting 1.5 from the Chargers on the road. So it's Chargers -1.5. He is taking the Bison is taking the Bengals +1.5.
That's a tough game to take.
Ooh. Okay.
Well, I think it's safe to say he didn't take anyone's pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rooster, you're at the top, so we're gonna let you go next.
All right. I am gonna take the Texans -7.5 at the Cowboys.
Okay.
Back it up. I'm in. Put me down.
There's some other people in line. Well,
you have
for
to
that,
pick but... a different game, Milk.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that game though.
Everyone does.
All right. You Vegas, go. You Vegas go. Can...
I'm next. I'm next at 7-3, and I hope I'm not stealing from anybody on this one. But I, where was it? I really like this year. Why am I not? Here it is. I really like. Speaking about how bad the Bears were this week, I really like the Packers -6 at the Bears. I know that's a lot of points to give on the road, and I know it's a division game, but I think the Packers are going to be just fine in that game. The Bears can't seem to recover from that Hail Mary. Nothing has gone right since it. So I'm taking the Packers on the road -6.
Okay.
And I am going to take the Eagles. Giving 3 at home against the Commanders.
Okay. All right. I mean, I think it should happen, but I won't say anything. I mean, Commanders are not good, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Who did Milk take?
I love the Texans, but I have to change my pick. I'm going to go with, and I need this team to lose, but I actually like it. I'm going to take Denver at home. I think Denver's a good team. What do you have that? 2.5?
Denver -2.5 versus the Falcons.
Yeah. I think they win by field goal.
I just want to say one thing before. Bison, you're listening now. I want you to know, buddy, you're in the big leagues now. There's no more excuses. There's none of this, our kicker is out and Brian Robinson is out. We were missing Jordan Mailata. We were missing receivers during the year. You're in the big leagues now, buddy. And so there's no such thing as a moral victory or a one-point loss to the Steelers. It's time for you to show up and beat us this Thursday. And if it is, the division's yours. It's yours, buddy. Take it.
Wow. Come and take it.
Wow. Wow. He has been making a lot of excuses lately. Did he blame the refs too? He never blames the refs.
Oh, he loves blaming the refs lately.
He says he never blames the refs and then blames them all the time.
No, I saw that. So that's interesting. We'll see. There could be a lot of excuses on Thursday. We'll see what happens.
All right. You guys finished with the picks? Let's move on to college football. Milk, I have a question for you. Has Carson Beck played himself into a second round draft pick?
I think so. I think we've been seeing this. Look, I think it really showed in the Gator game. Three picks, Florida almost wins, who's a terrible team, obviously. I think it showed in Ole Miss. I don't know, Pope. I mean, he just looked completely – he was very unproductive. I know their defense didn't help him that much, but I think he is not –
He's gone backwards.
He's gone way backwards. I mean, the beginning of the year, we're talking like first round draft pick, right?
Yep.
Like first,
there were some guys, including Mel, who had him as the number one quarterback off the board early in the
year. Yeah. Right. Congratulations to Ole Miss. I'll tell you right now, that game, they lose that game every single time they're in that position.
Lane can't win a big game.
Every time. And it's going back before Lane. It's just Ole Miss loses a big, They've knocked off Alabama once or twice, but it's just always they're in that position. It's that time to separate. They lose. They showed up. That was a hell of a game. Great scene afterwards. And congrats to Lane. Like, I want him to be our coach at Florida. It's not going to happen, clearly, because we're going to bring back Napier. But man, he's in pole position now in the SEC. And
that really shook up. No, they're not in pole position, but that shook up the SEC.
Guys, I've lost track in this new world. How many teams from the SEC can get in the playoff? I can't even understand it anymore.
Four?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could have more, but I think it'll be four.
Is Georgia going to make the playoff?
So, you know, look, massive game next week. Tennessee at Georgia. Right now, Tennessee has one loss in the SEC. And, you know, if they beat Georgia, Georgia's out of probably the playoffs. I mean, I would think they're out of the playoffs. So, you know, who are the teams? I mean, you have Texas, you have A&M, you got Tennessee, and then probably out of the two loss teams, you'll have like Bama or Ole Miss.
I think Ole Miss is going to. They're in the playoff, guys. They're not going to win. They got Florida and Mississippi State.
Apparently, of the percentage chance of winning out, Ole Miss is the highest at like 70% chance of winning out. And most everybody else is 50% or lower. Like, most teams are suspected to possibly have one loss. Ole Miss is going to win out, which will put them in the playoff, I think.
Yeah.
But Ole Miss is not going to go to the SEC championship game.
No, but I think they get in at that large.
Well, and I think by the way, I think Alabama feels the same way. They're probably not going to go to the SEC championship game unless they win some tiebreaker deal. But they're playing really well. I mean, the Empire Strikes Back in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. And the Jalen Milroe that we thought we had at the beginning of the year, we thought we had up to the first half of the Georgia game, has made a reappearance the last two games.
Well, conversely to Beck, do you think, Pope, that four rushing touchdowns, he's run himself into maybe the top three, four quarterbacks taken in the first round?
The verdict is still out, Rooster. I mean, he had a really bad stretch of games where they lost to Vandy, when they lost to Tennessee. Tennessee was one of his worst game. So he's really, really up and down. Right now, obviously, he's up. Let's see how he plays against OU and Auburn to finish the SEC, and then how they play in the championship, you know, playoffs. But he's definitely a quarterback, I would say, between Beck and Milroe. Milroe is definitely moving up, and Beck is moving down.
His upside is so much higher than Beck's.
Well, yeah, I mean, because Milroe is potentially more like a Lamar Alexander type quarterback, which is
Lamar Jackson.
Jaden Daniels.
Or Jalen Hurts.
Or Jalen Hurts. Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy, just like Jalen. So, you know, I guess college football world needs to be on notice that Alabama appears to be back. And we'll see what happens the rest of the year. How about Indiana, guys?
Yeah. They're in.
10-0.
And by the way, how many, I mean, like, it's only a 12-team playoff. How many Big Ten teams are in? Ohio State's in.
Penn State's in. Probably Indiana. That's it.
Wait, Oregon?
Oregon, excuse me.
Oregon's number one in the country.
The number Oregon one team.
Oregon and teams.
But hold on. Indiana's got to go to Ohio State this weekend, correct?
Next weekend. Not next. Well, week. I think it's 2 weekends from now.
Okay, they're losing that game.
I think so.
Yes, agreed. But that gives them one loss. Now,
if Oregon and Ohio State went out.
Right. So Oregon, Ohio State went out. They play in the championship, Big Ten championship. The winner and the loser is in the playoffs, and Indiana has one loss. Aren't they in the playoffs?
I guess.
How do you deny them?
I guess you can't deny them.
Does the ACC,
but I'm not sure this year.
Same way they denied Florida State.
Yeah. Does the ACC and Big 12 get a spot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
ACC. Yeah. By the way, speaking of the ACC. Miami gets upset by Georgia Tech. Miami now has one loss in the ACC, which leaves just one team left in the ACC, the old ACC traditional powerhouse. That would be the.
How about them SMU Mustang ponies?
Is a joke for the end of the year.
So SMU is probably, unless they lose two games, they're going to go to the ACC championship and play either Miami or Clemson or Pitt, depending on what happens. And the winner of that game gets probably the number four slot in the college football playoffs with a bye. So right now, it's funny, if you look at the projected bracket, SMU's number four because they're the only undefeated team in the ACC. Now, if SMU runs the table, goes to the ACC championship game and gets blown out by a Miami or Clemson, I'm not sure SMU gets one of the top 12 slots because there's fixed schedule, right? So, ACC potentially could get just one team.
I think that's one and done. And I don't see any other team. I mean, you have to win the ACC if you're an ACC team, right? I mean,
and I think that's right.
Yeah.
So
the Big 12 is what?
Who's winning the Big 12?
Is that K-State?
Well, how about BYU surviving? I don't know if you guys saw that. It was one a.m. probably Eastern time.
Oh, that's right.
I wouldn't want to be playing Colorado if I was
against Utah. Yeah, it looks like BYU and Colorado are going to be in the Big 12 championship game. I think Colorado has to win that in order to go to the playoffs. So does Colorado beat BYU and does BYU then get a slot? Probably. Because BYU beat SMU.
Did you guys see that Travis Hunter played 161 downs in that game Saturday?
That's impressive, crazy. But he's going to wear out. I mean, his career is going to be short.
Are we sure Colorado is going to win out? They've got Utah, Kansas, and Oklahoma State.
Yes.
Yeah, they'll win out. OSU sucks.
OSU.
Yeah, they are terrible. They're terrible.
So, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to go unless they get upset. One of their final games. They're going to be in. Yeah. And Boise State is probably going to be the non-Power 5 12 seed.
So given Miami's loss and some of the up-and-down play by Milroe, if you're drafting number one this April and you need a quarterback, who are you taking?
Shedeur Sanders.
I agree. Anyone take Ewers over him?
Yes.
No.
I think Ewers is...
Ewers is middle of the first round.
Ewers has reached his peak. I just don't see an upside with him.
Now, if Arch was
coming out. I'd rather have Arch than you.
Arch would be the number one pick if he was coming out.
I think so, yeah.
I'm not buying
shit. And Cam, don't forget about Cam Ward. So he, you know, but I think Shedeur Sanders would be the number one pick.
He's tough as nails. He gets hit constantly because their offensive line is like Swiss cheese. And he just keeps coming back and winning.
About this, what's very upsetting about this upcoming NFL draft is that Jerry Jones is going to luck into Ashton Gentry from Boise State. That's very, very upsetting because that is going to be the running back next year.
You are assuming the Cowboys are going to draft a running back?
They have Zeke. Why would they do that?
Yeah, they have Zeke and Rico Dowdle and Deuce Vaughn. Come on now.
I mean,
we're going to run the wishbone.
Like, what? My only thing about Sanders is, I mean, he's literally got the number one. I mean, is Travis Hunter going to go one?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. Well, when it was the Patriots who looked like they were going to be the number one, everyone thought they'd take him, but now I don't know who it is.
He's got the number one draft pick as his wide receiver, who by the way, gets all of every reception. I mean, he leads the team every game, right?
But they have two other guys who are good, very good.
Yeah.
This guy named Warren and one other guy.
I want to see him again, and I can't. This is why I love the playoff this year, if they can get in. Now, maybe they have to win the conference to do that, but I'd like to see him against...
The Ole Miss wide receiver?
I want to see him play against a pretty good defense. I don't know about these.
On offense. Well, that's my question. What is Hunter going to play most of his snaps in the NFL? Where is he going to play?
Defense. Offense.
I agree with Pat. There's going to be defense. You think offense, Rooster?
I do, but you know, to back up you and Pope in the last game, I think they threw in his direction maybe four times.
He's going to be a shutdown corner, just like Deion,
which helps him play both ways because no one cares.
And that's more valuable unless he's an elite receiver like Justin Jefferson or somebody like that.
But I think they'll play around and use him in the offense sometimes.
They will. They will as a gimmick. Well, sure.
But no, isn't it much more valuable to have a shutdown corner than a good wide receiver?
I mean, I would think so.
Let's throw some punches. Who's got a punchable face?
Don't
call it a
comeback. I don't. I've punched Jerry and Steven and the son as much as possible. I'm done.
I have multiple punchable faces.
All right, you go. Start out.
Well, let me start with the NBA.
He's got props.
Does he have a props?
Yeah, no. I'm like the Cowboys. Things are slipping out of my hands. I'm like fumbling things like the Cowboys. God damn it! I can't hold on to the ball here in Dallas when the lights are in my eyes. So
I'm gonna punch that, Toby.
Good. I think I'm gonna start with the NBA and Marcus Hayes. You guys don't know who Marcus Hayes is, but he's a local writer in Philly, who's been in Joel Embiid's face for a long time. And there's a lot of things to get on Embiid about his conditioning, injury prone, sometimes his attitude. But Marcus Hayes decided to write an article this year that started out by essentially saying that Joel Embiid is a new man being a father who's named after his brother Arthur, who died early. And if Embiid wants to bring the legacy of being his the brother and father, then he at least needs to show up for games. Like, what and what? Like, so Embiid
lazy. That's just lazy journalism.
Lazy journalism.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Not so, doing your homework.
So yeah. Embiid shows up at the end of a game in the hallway locker room, sees Marcus Hayes and gives him a shove. And of course, other reporters are there. And the next thing you know, Embiid, who's finally ready to come back, now is suspended for three games. So let me first punch Marcus Hayes because it was lazy. It was personal, across the line. You can say whatever you want, journalism, free speech, whatever. That's just
It's gratuitous, unnecessary, and was almost deliberately instigating. And the NBA, shame on you, man. Like, there's so many bad things that happen in this league that people don't even get suspended for. They just get fined for. I get that you want to protect the press and everything like that. And I think you could have slapped Embiid with a $20,000 fine or something like that. But to keep this guy off the court, a star who you need for three games because he barely shoved the guy when the guy friggin' deserved it, both of them get a punch for me. So that's my punch number one. My punch number two, this is a little bit of a heavy topic, but you probably all heard this week that there's European soccer league games going on, and there was a game this week in one of the ongoing competitions between Ajax, a Dutch team, and Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of unclear whether these people were Ajax supporters or just plain people living in Amsterdam who are anti-Semitic and literally on the hunt for the fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv. But I don't think
it's unclear anymore.
House. You think?
Uh-huh. I think the authorities have released some statements about some social media posts they've discovered, and it was clearly an anti-Semitic hunt.
Well, it was clearly an anti-Semitic hunt. I guess the question is, were these actually like supporters of the team, Ajax supporters, or were these random people who were taking advantage of the fact that Maccabi Tel Aviv supporters are going to be down? My punch goes to all of these competitions these days, when you're bringing in different nations, are fueled with lots and lots of geopolitical shit going on. You've got to provide security for the supporters of these teams, no matter where they're from. If it's on the road, these games, it's no longer just fun and whatever. Well, we've always had soccer hooligans, but this was crazy, scary, and it's going to continue. It won't be just limited to anti-Semitism. It's going to be whatever geopolitical hot issue is going on. People are going to be on the hunt to cause really, really serious harm. And if you want to have these competitions, then the Euro folks got to keep it under control. That's my next punch. And I just want to say to my Southern brother, Brian Pope, like, you really had it there, buddy, with the Cowboys. And so let's give a left, let me give a right. This is an embarrassment to the NFL for this stupid stadium. It's the dumbest stadium in professional sports, on top of the dumbest owner. Close the effing windows. It's just, it's a bad look on TV.
Is that real? Is that really happening?
What?
This is yes.
It's a real thing.
How is this possible?
CeeDee Lamb never even saw the pass from Cooper Rush that was intended for him in the end zone, because when he looked for the ball, all he saw was a glare, and you could see him do that with his visor because he couldn't see.
The NFL has to step in.
This is not new.
Isn't there an NFL competition? Why doesn't the NFL step in and say, as a matter of competition, we're closing the curtains? Sorry, Jerry, whatever your problem is, this is a matter of competition.
Because they're not going to count out to... They're not going to mess with Jerry. And you realize this is the only stadium, as far as I know, in sports where it was built east-west. All stadiums are built north-south. And the reason is because you don't want to be playing into the sun, regardless of whether it's baseball or football or soccer or whatever, in the outside sports. It's just asinine.
Pathetic.
It's also the only stadium I've ever been to where 90% of the attendees are watching the game on television.
Yeah.
There's no one's watching the field. It's absurd.
That's all the punches I got.
Anyone else have a punch?
I've got one.
No! Yes. A milk punch!
Well, you know, this just kind of happened today. So I don't know if you guys saw, but our lovely former shortstop for the Rays.
Oh, I saw this
today.
I didn't see this.
And gun possession.
Yes. You know, you would think if you're on administrative leave from MLB and you have a trial starting on December 12th, you kind of lay low, not wander. Arrested this weekend in a parking lot. From what I hear, domestic disturbance issue. Maybe like he was playing footsie with another man's wife. There were guns
were pulled.
Guns were pulled. all sorts of shit going down. So unbelievable. We'll never see this guy again. So much talent wasted. He's probably going to prison. I'm punching him in the face. Unbelievable.
No punches.
And I have a slap because it's not been proven yet, I'd like to, slap the University of Florida head coach, Todd Golden, under investigation right now for what I understand is taking pictures of his junk and sending them to female students. I don't know why people do this. Rooster, you'll have to tell me why one day. But he was like liking Instagram posts and then like DMing chicks and then like unliking it so there wouldn't be proof that he like actually was talking to the girl or something. All sorts of accusations, not been proven yet.
It's not just one woman either.
Multiple with stalking too. Like they were walking to class and maybe look over to the left and he's like in the car following them, sort of stuff. Really freaky stuff. Yeah. So, if it's proven correct, I'll turn it into a actual punch, but it's a slap for now. So, yeah.
All right. Good one. How about lasso? Anyone have a lasso?
Barbecue sauce. Ah!
I have one.
Let's hear it.
What do you got?
All right. So, I was going to give this weeks ago, but I was still in mourning from the World Series loss. But hopefully you guys caught the story during this series of Garrett Cole and Anthony Volpe when they were little boys. They were Yankees fans, and there's picture. You know, you saw Volpe. How about the famous poster of picture of Garrett Cole holding up sign when he was a little boy that said Yankees fan now and forever, and his son held that sign up. The last game that he pitched in the World Series this year. And then
it's cool.
I think there's a picture of Volpe with getting an autograph from Derek Jeter when he was a little boy. And he grows up to become the shortstop for the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
It's just cool. It's really heartwarming stories about the two of them. And check it out. Look it up. They're good stories. I'm not paying them proper justice, but it was nice to see.
I like that.
Great. That was great. That was the best thing to happen to the Yankees the whole entire World Series.
Meanwhile, the Dodgers are getting the next great Japanese pitcher coming out. So,
did they sign Soto yet? I'm sure they'll sign.
They're trying to. We'll see.
I'm sure.
All right. Let's move on to buzzer beaters. Oh, you have one?
More of a preview than anything else, because we're going to be talking college hoops soon. But there was a great game this week. Carolina goes to Kansas, number one team this year so far, and was down by 20, came back, almost won, was actually ahead in the last minute, and it was kind of missed a three-pointer to win the game at the buzzer. And, you know, it just shows you college basketball is ready to go. Duke and Kentucky play this week. They play, I think, tomorrow. Cooper Flagg, we'll be talking about him from this pod for years. Looks like the real deal for Duke. Bama and UConn are 2-3 right now. So let's get it going.
Anybody have another buzzer? Milk?
Yeah, I'm just saying congrats to the Army Black Knights, man. 9-0 going into a bye week before they play Notre Dame. And I believe that game is in Yankee Stadium, correct?
Wow.
I think it is.
Traditionally it is, yeah.
Yeah, so it should be awesome. I don't know if they have a chance in that game, just like Navy didn't, but...
Yeah, in MetLife, yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool to see them undefeated. And they're, look, if they were to win out, I think they would be in the playoffs, right?
So that's my buzzer beater, which is I got to stick with my weekly update on the group of five teams, not the Power Five teams, but the Boise States. And so here's where it stands. The Boise State, they squeaked one out over Nevada. It doesn't seem like they're going to lose again. They are in pole position, speaking of pole position, but on breathing down their neck are Army, Louisiana Rage and Cajuns, who I believe are either no losses or one loss, and my Tulane Green Wave. So the scenario is Tulane could win out. If Tulane wins out, that is beating Navy, beating Memphis, and then being the AAC championship and beating Army, they could make the playoff if Boise State loses. Army, likewise, if they were to win out, beat Notre Dame and beat presumably Tulane in the AAC championship, Army would be in the playoff if Boise State loses. But everything really comes down to Boise State. If Boise State wins out, they are your group of five big power, you know, number 12 team.
Number 12,
like,
yep.
Yeah, and likely to play somebody like Ohio State in the first round. Others are outside looking in. So come on, Bronx. You got to lose one. Give a chance to Army and Tulane.
Yeah. All right. Listen, my buzzer is little NBA. We're about 10 games into the season, starting with some sad news. Chet Holmgren fractured his pelvis and is out for up to 2 months.
I did not know that.
So Oklahoma City is going to start the season behind the eight ball, unfortunately. Yes.
KD's out for like 6 weeks, isn't he?
I don't know. And heard that.
And so is Maxey. Tyrese Maxey's out till after Thanksgiving with a hamstring.
KD's just 2 weeks.
So it already looks like there's going to be a discrepancy between the East and the West. After 10 games, there are only two teams in the East with winning records. The Cavs, surprisingly, are undefeated, and they're actually 11-0. And so it's after 11 games. You know, we kind of thought this should have happened a year or two ago with the Cavs, and they seem to just be gelling as a team later than expected, but they certainly are now. And the Celtics are 9-2, but that's it. Nobody else in the East has a winning record. The Sixers are 2-7. The Knicks,
and you've got nine teams in the West with a winning record.
Yeah, there will.
Dallas is not 10.
Yeah, Dallas has got a 500 record. I think there are 10 teams in the West.
Very early, boys.
Yeah, it's very early, but
yeah,
the Bucks' start is concerning. They're 2-8, and they don't look good. You know, they can keep playing and playing and playing with that team, and I don't see them being the old Bucks. I mean,
the Sixers
will get better.
Worried about.
Oh, the Bucks. The Sixers, when Maxey's back and healthy and Embiid starting to play more, they'll be fine, but the Bucks look terrible. I'm a little concerned about the Knicks, too. I don't think they have good chemistry on that team this year.
All right.
Anything else, fellas?
Have a great week.
Yeah,
have a great week.
Good luck with everything else.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.